It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Martha McCallum.
I'm Bill Hemmer.
I'm Shannon Bream, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Monday, February 6, 2023, I'm Mike Emanuel. The fallout from a Chinese spy balloon flying over much of the United States for about a week, with some lawmakers expressing concerns about how long it took President Biden and his team to defend U.S. sovereignty.
This has to do with national security, and he's absolutely failing on it, and he has to be held accountable, and this administration has to be held accountable.
I'm Chris Foster. Even more help wanted signs are up, maybe too many if you're trying to bring down inflation.
This jobs number was good and bad. It shows that it's a resilient economy, not in recession, and that there's a tailwind for the Fed, but it's a tailwind that they're having to fight.
I'm Peggy Grandy, and I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
A Chinese spy balloon was taken out off the coast of South Carolina by an Air Force F-22 over the weekend. But there is bipartisan concern about China's behavior, such as this from Washington Democrat Congressman Adam Smith.
The larger issue is how aggressive China is being all over the world and how the U.S. and our allies need to organize ourselves to respond to that.
Arkansas Republican Senator Tom Cotton says President Biden, as commander-in-chief, failed a critical test.
The president was paralyzed for an entire week by a balloon. We should have shot this balloon down over the Aleutian Islands. We should never have allowed it to transit the entire continental United States.
With China remaining a prominent threat, House Ways and Means Chairman Jason Smith, a Republican from Missouri, says there should be alarm about how dependent the United States has become on Chinese products.
When it comes to our defense, when it comes to our energy, when it comes to our food and our medical, we have to make sure that we are secured in this country and we are not reliant on countries like China and Russia. Unfortunately, we are in a lot of cases.
In other news, President Biden is due to deliver his State of the Union address to Congress and the American people tomorrow night. White House economic advisor Jared Bernstein says the president has a good story to tell on the economy.
The rate of inflation has fallen 6 months in a row. It is now considerably lower here than it is in the EU, than it is in Germany, than it is in the UK.
However, many Republican lawmakers, like Missouri Senator Eric Schmidt, are watching closely to see if the president offers solutions to issues he's kept largely silent about, like the crisis at our southern border.
I mean, look, this is an administration that has completely abandoned our southern border. We have an open border at our southern border, and now our airspace is not secure because of the incompetence of this administration.
But before that address, lawmakers are demanding answers on the Chinese spy balloon.
First of all, we should have been alerted to this.
Mark Wayne Mullen is a newly elected Republican senator from Oklahoma.
Come to find out, they've known about this for some time as it was traveling to the lower 48. And why it took so long. And then when we did understand it was there, what was their reasoning for leaving it up there? And then what was the Chinese looking for? I suspect that the Chinese was trying to understand our logistical system on how we get our crude and petroleum products to and from Alaska. I believe that they fear, and I fear also, that one day we'll be going to war. I believe they were trying to figure out how they could weaken our supply system from Alaska. That's just my opinion. There's nothing backing that up. It's just, why else would they be following that specific route? They can sit there and say that, you know, it was a balloon they lost control of. I don't believe that for a second. I know without question, the only reason why it was brought down is because the American people demanded it be brought down. But there is a lot of questions that we need to understand, and we need to shut China up. China's saying that this is a excessive use is absolutely absurd for them to even say that. And we should come out strong and criticize what they're saying and make it very clear. You don't come into our airspace, period.
Senator, you've wasted no time since taking on your new role, introducing 3 bills within your first week in the Senate, addressing the need for energy independence and lower energy costs. Tell me a bit more about your legislation and why, of course, energy is a top priority for you.
Well, energy is the backbone of our economy. You can't have a reliable and an affordable economy if you don't have reliable and affordable energy. You show me a country that has high energy prices and unreliable energy, I'll show you a third world country. And we had the ability to be energy independent. We don't have to beg the cartels at Saudi Arabia with OPEC to increase output. We don't have to be funding the war in Ukraine by buying Russian petroleum products and crude oil, by the way, which we still are because we haven't found a replacement. And this administration knows that if they cut that supply line off, that gas will go through the roof. And we don't have to have that. We can do this here. But unfortunately, what we have seen is this administration playing politics with energy. And so what we're trying to do is take politics out of the energy as much as we can. And we do that by taking it out of the hands of Washington, D.C. politicians. And we start with the cross-border permitting, like Keystone Pipeline. Keystone Pipeline was rejected or the permit pulled for no other reason than the political ploy. That permit cancellation alone cost us $800,000 or 800,000 barrels of production per day. Think of what that would be doing to our prices. We wouldn't have to be releasing our strategic reserves that's supposed to be set up for national emergency issues. We wouldn't have to be draining that down to the lowest level since 18 or 1984. We would be producing it ourselves and still having a large stockpile. And then let's talk about federal lands. Federal lands, just since the president has been in office, he's taken over 100 million acres out of production just since he's been in office. That's equivalent to 1 million barrels per day of production. Now, this is since he's been in office. So when President Trump was in office, we were producing 1 million barrels per day out of federal lands, more than we are today. And because of Joe Biden buying to this woke environmentalist lying in a group, they have now taken out 1 million barrels per day. So now if you take Keystone Pipeline, you take the federal production lands that was set aside to produce our natural resources, that's 1.8 million barrels of production per day since the Biden administration has went into office that we've taken out of production. Well, we're saying that they're going to play politics with that. Give it back to the states. Allow the states to manage their land that the federal government took from them to begin with. Allow them to develop it. No one's going to take care of your backyard better than the individuals that live there. So take it out of Washington, D.C., put it back in the hands of the state. Let them decide if they want to produce or not. And then we do the same thing with fracking. Fracking was developed by wildcatters who wanted to go out and go after oil in an unconventional way. And they worked with the states to do that. And they figured out a safe and productive way to get oil in a way that they never thought they would. And it let us be energy independent. For the first time underneath President Trump, we became a net exporter of oil and gas. But now the federal government's wanting to take over the permitting process and says one size fit all. Well, one size doesn't fit all. The geographics of different rock formations, actions that different states take, that's the best way to handle it because we keep it local. Well, we allow locals to make those decisions. If they want to do it, let them do it. But let the right people make those decisions. So our three bills attack those issues and say, let's take it out of the hands of Washington, D.C. politicians and put it back in the hands of the states. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
With the State of the Union coming up tomorrow, you've called on President Biden to address the issues at the southern border, something you've been very vocal about. Do you believe he will?
I don't know if he can. I believe he should. He owes it to the American people to give them an answer on what his strategy is. But if he does, he has to talk about a failure. How do you turn that around when you're addressing the State of the Union? In fact, I don't really know what he's going to talk about. I imagine he'll talk about this latest job report that'll come out, and he'll tout some ridiculous number saying that, see, his policies are working and he's seen higher than expectations. That's the only thing that they can talk about that's been positive since he's been in office. But if you start talking about the southern border, how's he going to address the fact that we've had 4.3 million people that we know have been apprehended and released into the United States since he's been in office? That's not counting the gotaways. That's just the ones mm-hmm. that we know that's been released. It's been captured and released inside the United States, 4.3 million. Now, if you think about that number, this is astonishing if you think about that. That's more than the population of 24 states. That's more than Oklahoma. That's more than Kansas. That's more than South Dakota. That's more than Wyoming. I mean, the numbers go on and on. More than 24 states. We've had that many since he's been in office. We've had that many known illegals come inside the United States. Mm-hmm. That's a national security issue. You think about just the ones that have been on the terrorist watch list this year alone, Mike. This is astonishing. This year alone, we just started February. They've already apprehended 38 known terrorists that was on the terrorist watch list on the southern border. If we've apprehended 38, how many have got here? So it's not a matter of if this becomes a national security issue. This is already a national security issue. It's a matter of when they strike and where they strike at. And he's absolutely turning a blind eye. So this has nothing to do with immigration. This has to do with national security, and he's absolutely failing on it. And he has to be held accountable, and this administration has to be held accountable.
Let's talk about the nation's debt. $31.5 trillion and growing every minute of every day. We saw a first conversation between President Biden and Speaker McCarthy. What steps do you hope are made moving forward to address the nation's debt?
Well, Speaker McCarthy, who's a very good friend of mine, he has been talking with the Republican Party, the Senate and the House. In fact, we'll be having a conference with him come this Wednesday with the Senate. He's been talking to us for over a year, trying to get prepared for this, knowing what needs to happen. He's been very clear that he's not interested in raising the national debt and our borrowing power unless it comes with cuts. And mm-hmm. we couldn't agree more. Now, ideally, what we'd like to do is balance a budget. Just say, we're balancing the budget, right? This is a perfect time to do it. No way the Democrats are going to let us do that. And honestly, I don't think in the economy we could. I don't think you could just pull that much money out of the economy all at once. And so the question that we have is, moving forward, we have to raise the national debt, but how are we going to do it? I don't think we can even discuss it. And unless we actually have an automatic cut across the board, and I don't necessarily like across the board cuts, but we're not going to do the work to identify where the cuts need to actually happen. So we're going to have to start with across the board cuts immediately before we can raise the national debt. And then we're going to have to start figuring out how we walk towards a balanced budget. The dirty secret is, though, even if we do get a balanced budget, it's probably going to be 10 years. I mean, mark my words on this, Mike, it's going to be 10 years. Yep. The issue is every 2 years we start a new Congress, and one Congress can't make the other one beholden to their budget. So what kind of teeth can we put in it to make sure that it does actually balance in 10 years rather than us coming back in two more years saying we're going to balance in 10 years, and instead of balancing in 8 more years, we're going to balance it now it's going to be 12 years and we're never going to get it balanced.
Right.
So I think it has to come with cuts. And we got to have an actual plan for the American people to know how we're going to do it and how we're going to balance it. We have revenues coming into the United States that it should be able to balance it in 10 years if we're willing to do the hard stuff. And then to do that, we got to start realizing what is our goal? What is the responsibility of the United States? What is our wants and what is our needs? And we got to start taking care of our needs right now. We have a lot of fat inside the United States, and we need to cut it and get back to sound footing financially.
Well, Senator Mark Wayne Mullen of the great state of Oklahoma, congratulations on your new role, and we'll be following you. Thanks for your time today.
Appreciate your time, Mike.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Stay on top of the latest news and information from Fox News. Listen and download the Fox News Hourly Update on your time. The trending stories you need anytime you want it. Listen and download now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
This is Peggy Grandy with your Fox News commentary coming up.
Most economists expected job growth to slow down in January. They were wrong.
Holy cow. 517,000 jobs out of the estimate was 185,000.
Shoka Soni on Fox Business, President Biden at the White House.
They said we can't make things in America anymore. That somehow adding jobs was a bad thing. Well, or that the only way to slow down inflation was to destroy jobs. Well, today's data makes crystal clear what I've always known in my gut. These critics and cynics are wrong.
The unemployment rate is at a nearly 54-year low, 3.4%.
A really, really positive report, and it shows kind of a healthy economy creating jobs and people getting jobs. So it's still a good time to be looking for work.
Wall Street Journal Associate Editor John Bussey.
But the context of that, you know, is maybe a little bit more of a muddled picture, because we're seeing consumer sentiment begin to decline just slightly. You know, consumer spending is kind of the growth in it has come down quite a bit. And remember, the consumer is about 2/3 of the economy. These people getting employed, consuming things, are kind of what drive the economy. You've seen manufacturing begin to drift down, manufacturing activity. You've seen some layoffs, big tech companies laying off, as well as auto companies. So there's kind of contrary indicators to that big jobs number. And you're kind of pressed to wonder whether or not this was, again, one of the episodic discombobulations of the last 2 years with the pandemic and shutdowns, where there's going to be kind of uneven data as a result of that. There's not going to be sort of straight on curves, because, you know, sectors are coming back online because supplies are finally reaching them, right? Yeah. So they have to hire people to make things because there's been excess demand. And then that tails off again when things kind of begin to return to normal and supply chains return to normal.
I mean, you mentioned the pandemic. And look, so it's not just me. Economic numbers lately, last couple of years, have been defying expectations more, right? I mean, more things are working counterintuitively, like you said. Is there some noise that's throwing economists off? Is it mostly or all still pandemic effects? Do the models need looking at?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the pandemic. Remember, the Fed was thinking, hey, you know, this inflation thing is going to be transitory. And they got thrown off because it was not. It got the pandemic and the lockdowns. And, you know, the fact that people were sick and they couldn't come to work, or they were afraid to come to work, and factories had to be shut down, everything from food processing to, you know, manufacturing, that threw their expectations off. They thought things would rebound much faster, but they haven't. There's still these disequilibriums. You know, in general, though, the economy has slowed down. You had only 1% year-on-year growth in the fourth quarter of last year. On the other hand, the year itself was 2.9% growth. And for an economy our size, that's a good number.
What's going on in other countries with economies not our size, but in the same ballpark? I mean, are they having a similar job market, inflation, wage gains? I mean, does that stuff move in lockstep a lot, or are there policy choices that make the situations all distinct?
No, I think you're seeing what you're suggesting there, which is that there has been pretty much of a global reaction to what's happened over the last 3 years. You saw inflation, you have seen, and it exists now, inflation pretty much throughout the world, particularly in Europe, which has kind of a trading zone and economy similar to the United States. They're wrestling with the same thing. They had the additional complication of the war in Ukraine, which crimped energy supply, gas and oil out of Russia. But Europe seems to have kind of navigated around that and found other sourcing. There was great concern that it was going to tip Europe into a profound recession because of spiking energy prices. But Europe has kind of found its way around that political problem, sourcing gas, particularly from other countries. And a slightly milder climate has helped the frigid temperatures that might have required more energy expenditure haven't materialized as severely as usual. So yes, you're seeing similar reaction, similar kind of economic bouncing in other parts of the world.
Back to inflation and the Fed. They've been trying to get inflation down. Like you said, there was a miscalculation. The free money probably lasted too long, I guess. Am I right there? And if you're with the Fed, what does this job report say to you?
Well, it says a whole bunch of things. I mean, the Fed has raised rates substantially over the last, you know, 8-10 months, and it's had an effect. Borrowing costs have gone up for businesses and for individuals thinking of buying a house. And as a result, some of that economic activity has been pulled out of the economy to try to slow things down. And you've seen inflation begin to come down. And Jay Powell was saying that at the meeting this week, in which they raised rates yet again, a quarter of a point. You know, 4.4% inflation, ex food and energy, which is something that the Fed likes to look at. And that's from 5.4% last March. So it's not a bad decrease that we're seeing, but it's still substantially higher from where the Fed wants to get. They want to get to about 2%, where they consider that relative price stability, where people aren't having to be surprised by jumps in prices, and that creates all sorts of instability in the economy and business. So this jobs number was good and bad. It shows that it's a resilient economy, not in recession, and that there's a tailwind for the Fed. But it's a tailwind that they're having to fight, because at the end of the day, the Fed is going to have to create more slack in the employment numbers and in the economy, and bring that employment number down for them to really address inflation the way they want to.
Explain slack to me.
Well, it sounds like it's a great thing to have everybody employed, and it is. But from economic management, that's a problem, because when everybody's employed and there's huge competition by businesses for individuals to come work for them, they have to bid up the price. They have to provide signing bonuses or say, I'll pay you 10% more than Joe or Josephine over there. Come work for me. Well, when that happens, you have wage inflation. And that's a big number that the Fed looks at. They are concerned that rising wages will contribute to overall inflation. So they need to have slack in the economy, or slack in the employment numbers, which is a kind of a certain number of people unemployed. There has to be sort of slosh in the system. None of us want to be that slack or that slosh. But if you step back and just kind of unemotionally look at an economy, you need that degree of flexibility in the economy to keep prices from rising too quickly.
So I guess, again, looking, like you said, looking at this dispassionately, you don't want to be the one who's laid off, or the one of the many who've been laid off in the tech industry lately. But I guess the goal for the Fed is to just balance what's bad for the few is better for the many. And you've got to figure out how to keep those numbers as optimal as possible.
I think that's exactly right. And if you were to sort of be looking for a Goldilocks kind of zone on this, you'll have as much employment as possible. You know, the expectation, we had a survey of economists recently, 61% are still thinking that there's going to be a recession in the next 12 months, and that unemployment will get up to 4.7%. So there's a disjuncture between these latest numbers and what the general population of economists think. And also, I mean, you're seeing that across the board. The IMF just raised its growth number for the global economy. So there's a kind of disjuncture between what some of the professionals think is going to happen and what's actually happening. But for the Fed, the sort of the Goldilocks zone will be to bring unemployment up just enough to really damp down wage growth and other price increases across the economy without raising unemployment so much that that itself is damaging to the economy. Consumers really pull in their horns and spending, and you do tip into a recession. They're sort of walking that fine line. And so far, they seem to be doing it. We're not in the recession that everybody expected. That might still be forthcoming, but it may not be as severe. You might sort of dip into a recession, which is a contraction of the economy, where the economy actually shrinks for a couple of quarters. You might dip into that and kind of come out the other end pretty healthy, because you've expunged some of the forces that were driving up inflation quite dangerously over the last 12 months.
Look, there are about two jobs for every unemployed American. Are wages not going high enough to get those people into the workforce?
Well, that's a great question. You know, here you do have an incredibly tight labor market, 1.9 jobs available for every person who's unemployed. And yet, and we saw that reflected in wage growth over the last, 10 months particularly. Here again, there might be disjunctures that are kind of working themselves out. You might be getting people coming back into the economy in bursts as COVID in the United States is still there. It's still a danger. People are still getting sick. You're still having a lot of people die and getting hospitalized. But in general, there seems to be a, rightly or wrongly, a desire for kind of a return to normal. And so you see people re-entering the economy. And so there might be circumstances now where kind of the waves of individuals are coming in and they're getting employed. But the severe shortage of key people and the desire to retain those who you've already hired, that fever may have broken slightly. Look, you know, hourly wages still up 4.4%. That's not a bad number. It is suggestive of inflation also.
As President Truman said, bring me a one-armed economist because I'm tired of on the other hand. John Bussey, associate editor of the Wall Street Journal. Talk to you later.
My pleasure.
Here's a look at the week ahead. Tuesday.
President Biden delivers his second State of the Union address before a joint session of Congress. This year, the president is working with a divided Congress after Republicans gained a majority in the House. Gun violence, the economy, and the war in Ukraine among the likely topics.
Wednesday.
Several former Twitter employees are set to testify before a House committee as the Republican-led panel questions them about the platform's handling of reporting on President Biden's son, Hunter.
Friday.
President Biden will host Brazil's President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva at the White House. The two are expected to discuss migration, economic development, and security measures. The meeting comes a month after protests in Brazil following the election defeat of former President Jair Bolsonaro. Also on Friday, Titanic returns to a select number of theaters to celebrate the film's 25th anniversary. The James Cameron epic will be screened in 3D 4K high-definition resolution for the event. And that's a look at your week ahead. I'm Rich Dennison, Fox News.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Rate and review the Fox News Rundown on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Peggy Grandin. What's on your mind?
Birthdays are important to celebrate. Yes, as milestones, but also as markers of significance and consequence. 112 years ago this week, on February 6, 1911, Ronald Wilson Reagan was born in Tampico, Illinois. He's remembered and celebrated all these years later, not because he's gone, but because of how he lived. The legacy he left behind both inspires and, in part, mystifies us still. He's been analyzed and scrutinized from every angle, yet the magical formula or secret recipe of Ronald Reagan all these years later seems as elusive as ever. What was behind his indisputable success? Can his ability to communicate and connect with others be imitated, learned? What about his capacity to rally people to support him? Not just enthusiastically agree with his ideas, but truly evangelize for Reaganism, or more importantly, Americanism. Was the essence of Ronald Reagan uniquely his and will never be replicated? Or is there still an undiscovered element to his past which could inform our future? Ronald Reagan was authentic and unapologetic about who he was and who he wasn't. We as a nation were lucky. He embodied the beauty of an Only in America story. The range of his life spanned from humble simplicity to global greatness, and then back to the simplicity of his beginnings in a humble and in many ways tragic end. This American crusader became a magnet of greatness and liberty, drawing others in with a desire to be allied and aligned with him and with the USA. His embodiment of American exceptionalism was infused with both the acknowledgement of the many divine blessings bestowed upon America and its people, coupled with the responsibility to be good stewards of that exceptionalism, sharing our strength with a world in need of leadership and resolve. Patriotism is contagious, and Reagan spread it generously everywhere he went. People loved him, but also loved themselves and were proud to be Americans when he was president. Whether they worked with their hands on a family farm or worked for a corporation in a high-rise building, Americans felt important to the nation and valued by their president. As we celebrate Ronald Reagan this week, we really celebrate America and Americans who were part of an era in which President Reagan ensured that government got out of the way of the American people, allowing them to unleash their innovation, ingenuity, creativity, and industriousness. Reagan led us and invited us to join him, but even he credited the American people for doing the hard work and being the difference makers in the nation, not him. Together, under President Reagan's leadership, we, not just he, made America great and the world safer. Perhaps the secret of Ronald Reagan has been evident all along. Live simply, love generously, care deeply, speak kindly, leave the rest to God. That doesn't sound so mysterious or impossible. It sounds like the way most Americans live their lives every day, and do so regardless of who is in the Oval Office. Even amidst these dark and difficult times politically for our nation, as we celebrate the birth and life of Ronald Reagan, we are reminded anew that America is still Reagan country, which means that yes, like he always promised, America's best days are yet to come. Our proudest moments are yet to be. Our most glorious achievements are just ahead. This is Peggy for the Fox News Rundown. I was the former executive assistant to President Ronald Reagan from 1989 to 1999 and am author of the book, The President Will See You Now, My Stories and Lessons from Ronald Reagan's Final Years.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.